through the kindness and generosity of Father Belli and Father DiMartino, they agreed to give me the night off last night so that I could attend my 20th high school reunion in Alexandria. And I normally don't go to reunions, and because one of the organizers of the reunion is a good friend of mine from grade school, and we also went to high school together, I decided just because they asked me to come that I would show up. And I don't know, I didn't really keep in touch with many people after high school. In fact, I hadn't been back to my high school until yesterday in 20 years. So a lot of things have changed in the building. Seems, I don't know about you, but every time I leave a place, they upgrade everything. It's amazing how things get so much better after you're gone. Like, why didn't we have this when I was there? But I had some interesting reactions yesterday being a priest. My best friend said to me on the side, "Padre, you recognize any of our classmates from visits to the jail?" I said, "Maybe." Another guy came up to me and said, "Magat, dude, nice costume, but Halloween's next week, buddy." Some people didn't know I was a priest. And another girl came up to me and admitted, she says, "Father, I'm so sorry I judged you. I thought you just dressed up like that to get attention." And I said, "You're really a priest?" "Yes, I really am a priest." The interesting thing, though, was that going into last night's reunion, I didn't have a homily written for today, but I left with many. So I'll just share one. This past week, I was on silent retreat with a very saintly retired bishop. He was the Archbishop of New Orleans when Katrina hit a few years back. And he had amazing stories to tell us about what it's like to run a diocese when 75% of your parishes are inoperable. Could you imagine? And when, you know, large percentages of the population left and just went elsewhere, many never came back. And he had a lot of insights. This man has suffered a lot in his episcopacy and in his life. And he was actually giving us a conference, a talk, on today's gospel, although I don't know he realized that it was going to be this coming week's gospel. In any case, that experience together with what I encountered last night reminded me of what the Archbishop said. And it's something that both Blessed John Paul II, whose memorial, by the way, we celebrated yesterday, and Pope Benedict XVI, our current Holy Father, have lamented over in recent years in regards to the state of Christian faith in the West, in our culture. And they've said something like this. They said, "Something that exists today is the antithesis of the gospel we just heard. The gospel we just heard from Matthew chapter 22 reminds us that all of us, by virtue of being God's chosen people, his holy people, are called to love the Lord our God with all our heart, all our soul, all our mind, all our strength, and all of our will. And then to love our neighbor as ourselves." It seems simple, right? But easier said than done. This archbishop lamented, joining the Holy Father's words, joining Pope John Paul II's words, that today there exists what is called a practical atheism in the world. What does he mean by that, a practical atheism? Well, let me distinguish that from what I like to call dogmatic atheism. Dogmatic atheists are those who write books, who try to prove that God does not exist. And you've seen them on the news, and, you know, they're trying to, you know, say why God is not great and all these different other works that they've produced. I mean, they really have this sort of worldview and philosophy that God does not exist, and those of us who believe in God, let alone practice any religion, are just simply fools. We're just deluding ourselves. Remember Karl Marx? He said, religion is the opium of the people. It's a crutch for us to hang on to because life stinks, basically. And life's tough, so we need this help called religion. That's not what I'm talking about. This is even much more subtle. A practical atheist believes one of two things. And it may not necessarily be that they actually outright think this, but they live in this way, that either A, God exists for them, or B, he doesn't exist at all, and therefore I can live my life as if God does not exist. So the moral choices I make, the decisions that I come to, are made really without any discernment as to what God would want me to do. I just sort of live this sort of smart, practical, worldly wisdom type of thing, and I just fit God in where it's convenient or easy or if I remember. Now, this is something a little less subtle, but nevertheless still something that plagues many of us. Oftentimes, people are asking me for advice on how to fit God into their day. How to fit God into their day. And I think the question is legitimate insofar as people say, well, Father, you know, I'm so busy, I've got so many things going on, I have so many concerns that I don't have time to pray. Or I find it hard to make time to pray. Okay, fair enough. I'm happy to engage this person because obviously they're searching. That's fine. But I'd like to remind them of this gospel passage. The gospel passage, if you notice, in no way, shape, or form suggests that God should be a part of our lives, as if he's a compartmentalized section of our life, or just a little box to check off each day. Okay, got my God stuff done, boom. Time to go to the ATM, time to go to the grocery. I mean, it's like another chore, like another thing to accomplish. Our Lord would be appalled at such an approach because his words are very much the opposite. Love the Lord your God with all your heart, all your mind, all your strength, and all your will. So the person that says to me, Father, I want to make God more a part of my life, begs the question, well, how do you view God to begin with? Because I'll tell you how he views you. He expects not that he's more of a part of your life. You may want to consider this. If you didn't exist in the mind of God, you wouldn't even exist at all. So none of us should say, I want God to be more a part of my life. We should just say, I want God to really, I mean, his will, his Holy Spirit, his life should be the thread that ties all of the different aspects of my life together. Everything I do, the manner in which I drive, the manner in which I sit in traffic, the manner in which I deal with coworkers, my in-laws, my difficult child, whatever the case may be, the way that I interact with store clerks or telemarketers, I mean, all of these things need to be thread with that first commandment. You know, St. Augustine said, love God as this says, and then do what you want. Convenient, right? Because if you love God the way that this gospel says, loving other people, loving yourself, that'll all fall into place. But you see, we can't just settle for making God more a part of my life. That just doesn't really work. And really, if you think about it, I'll give you a very good visual example of how Judaism taught us this as a closing thought this morning. You know that Jewish men, generally Orthodox Jewish men, wear a little beanie on their head called a yarmulke. I'm sure you've seen it before. And, you know, if you go to places in the Northeast, especially New York, you'll see that very commonly, even on the subway or anywhere you go, if you've been to the Holy Land, certainly. And you notice that our bishops also wear one. The Holy Father's white, the bishops wear a violet one. And I don't know about you, but one day when I was in seminary, it dawned on me, why do they wear that? Right? And a Jewish man explained it to me, actually, believe it or not. And he says, Father, the Jewish understanding of that, and he says, and I would suppose the Christian understanding would be the same, is that the reason why we wear this little yarmulke is that it is a constant, physical, tangible reminder that we live under God's dominion. And that, in a way, this little yarmulke represents heaven, and we live under God's watchful gaze. That I find that very, very beautiful, because it means that we live in the presence of God every single moment of our lives, whether we realize it or not. And I don't mean to think of it as if, you know, God is watching. You better be good. You know, like Santa Claus, right? You better watch out, okay? You better not cry. So the idea here is that this gospel reestablishes for us something even more fundamental than everything I just said. Very simply, God is the creator, and we are his creatures. We were created for God. We were created for his pleasure. Many of you remember your Baltimore Catechism. Why did God make me? To know him, love him, and serve him in this life, so as to be happy with him in the next. Simple. Sadly, many Catholics today don't know the answer to that question. Why am I here? To know God, love God, and serve God, and to be happy with him in this life and in the next. Simple. And we don't live with the Creator in mind and in our heart, then that's when you notice everything in your life going awry. Because if God exists for me versus I exist for God, then that's the very easy way to make God just a part of my life. Just another compartment. Another thing to check off during the day. And I will tell you from experience in the confessional of nearly 10 years, the most fundamental problem that all of us face, from bishop down to 7-year-old, the age of confession, is losing sight of the fact that he is the creator and we are his creatures. If we had that relationship firmly implanted in our hearts and in our minds and really believed that, really bought into that, you would notice in your lives things falling into so much better order. Priorities would line themselves up so much more neatly because you understand that you live in God's presence under his dominion, like the yarmulke wearer does. So perhaps we should remember then this one prayer. There's a prayer that we say during the week right before the Holy, Holy, Holy. And it goes something like this. It says, Lord, you have no need of our praise, yet our desire to praise you is itself your gift. All is gift from God. All is grace. And if you really think about the long view of your life, this part of it, very short. Even 150 years of human life compared to eternity, nothing. Zero, almost zero. So we're not made for this life, ultimately. We're made for the next. This is preparation for that. So long as we keep God on the forefront of our minds, acknowledging that we live in his presence, that he is the creator, and we are his creatures, this first and greatest commandment, and consequently the second, should all fall neatly into place for us. Easier said than done. Much easier said than done. But we have to begin somewhere, and this is the place. O Mary, conceive without sin.